You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the weekend, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. And today we're going to talk to someone in Pereira, in the coffee zone. So it's Pereira, yes, the heart of our coffee-growing country. And as always, I apologize beforehand for the sound quality. You know, it's Latin America. Everything's noisy, whether it be a painter outside your building, my child here in the studio. You know, I am a stay-at-home dad working from my desk, so I apologize for the quality. But we always have interesting conversations, and if you can set your, let's say, listening levels past the background noise, you're going to be enriched by whomever we have on the show here at Columbia Calling. As always, I love to hear from you, so I'm just going to say it again. ColumbiaCalling@gmail.com, ColumbiaCallingRadio.com, Twitter, Facebook, etc. But this week, we're talking to Erin Donaldson in Pereira. She is the open-minded traveler. That's her website is. Let's have a look again. It's the open... It's openmindedtraveler.com. And look at some of the headlines that she's got on her website. Savage Paradise Part 1, How to Take Your Baby to the Rainforest, if that occurs to you. Cacao Puro El Choco, Our Colombian Chocolate Story. Buying a Little House in the Rainforest Pueblo. This is an adventurous lady out there. So she's based in Pereira, but goes off into the Choco the whole time. And we'll be talking to her about her experiences here in Colombia. And believe me, I pretty much reckon they're going to be quite extreme. She's an interesting gal, this Erin Donaldson. So listen, don't go away. Definitely listen to this. As for me, I've been laid out for a week. That's why we've been a little bit flojo or lazy here. This is episode 124. I know there's been a week's gap, but I've been laid out with a parasitic convention in my tummy from tropical parasites caught over this Christmas period. Honestly, it was awful. And I've had parasites before, and I've been on the metronidazole and whatever, but I had to actually check myself into a clinic to get myself checked out and given the green light to continue, because I'm now on strong drugs. No booze for me at the moment, because I'm now on strong drugs treating these parasites. You know, such is life in the tropics. And I have to say, thankfully, if you're concerned, I am getting better, but it was miserable. I mean, proper cartwheeling in the bathroom, if that's an image that you want to envisage here. So cartwheeling in the bathroom while I expelled the venoms from my body. I've got some really interesting interviewees in the pipeline. You might have heard of a few of them. But first of all, today is Erin Donaldson. And then for next week, we'll be talking to Santiago Giraldo, who is of the director of the World Heritage or Global Monuments Fund. And he's based here in Colombia and is pretty much the voice of reason and for the Sierra Nevada and the Ciudad Perdida or the Lost City. So we'll have an interesting interview with him for 125, and I think 126 is going to be with Dan Ely, who was a teacher at the Bennett School in Cali before a tragic accident left him paralyzed, and he almost died in Leticia, but is back in the UK and is coming out to Cali soon to talk about his experiences. He now raises money for schools, I believe, in the Amazon. So interesting people doing things, people with editorial content, people with interesting and informed opinions about Colombia and what they're doing. And that's who I want to reach out to. That's who I want to talk about, is these people out here doing stuff. You know, we're all doing something for Colombia. But as I improve, my health improves, I will be embarking on new projects and new adventures this year. I've been interviewing architects here in Bogota for a renovation of an apartment I've bought for me and my family. So this will be something that perhaps will then pop up in coming months as well here on Columbia Calling, about buying apartments or redoing apartments or refurbishing apartments. And of course, you know, raising a child here in Colombia. And aside from that as well, in addition to that, I will be starting this very Wednesday, my PhD in social and human sciences here at the Universidad Javeriana. So I'm sure that this will open up more avenues for interesting, to find interesting people to interview, because I really, really enjoy doing Columbia Calling and meeting interesting people and getting them on the show and talking about what they're doing. So please support us. Please keep listening and letting us know how we can improve and what you want to hear from us. You know, what do you think is of importance to the listening audience out there? And I know I've got a good number of people from the Colombian diaspora. I've received mail from Edmonton in Canada, Fort McMurray in Alberta as well. I've received mail from Colombians in the UK. And I know I've got UK people with interests in Colombia and, of course, Americans and beyond, all listening to this show, and Colombians in Germany too, I believe. So spread the word, please, because we need to keep this growing and the pool of talent that we can tap into and then put one another in touch with. That's the thing, isn't it? We're all here for Colombia, not because of Colombia. We're here for Colombia. We're here for her. So it's very exciting to be here in 2016 with the dialogues continuing and everything going in the right direction on the surface, at the very least. Positive times in Colombia. That's what we hope for. I'm going to sign off shortly and we're going to have a short break and we'll be back with Erin Donaldson in from Pereira talking about her adventures as the open-minded traveler. So thank you for listening to Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall and don't go away. We'll be right back. And we're back, episode 124, and then we're here with Erin Donaldson, who's in Pereira at the moment, the first ever person that we've had to call in from Pereira, so that's very exciting. Pereira, for those of you who don't know, is in the heart of the coffee region, so she's there in the sultry weather, and Pereira gets a funny write-up in some of the guidebooks, especially not the latest Lonely Planet, but the one before. It sort of describes it as a place of hot and lascivious women, So, Erin, are you going to put that image to bed for us, or are you going to say no? Pereira is that kind of place.
The paisa culture lives here. Of course, it's that kind of place.
Okay. Now, Erin, now tell me a little bit about yourself. You are originally from the U.S., but you've been living down here in Colombia for how long?
I've been here for 3 years. I came as an English teacher, fell in love, and it's been a journey into an amazing life.
Yeah, well, it's very, very independent spirit, I think, because, you know, we've been reading your blog, which, you know, a lot of people read, the openmindedtraveler.com. Now, you're Erin Donaldson. So where are you from in the U.S.? Most of my listeners are in North America. So let's get an idea of where you're from.
Mostly Reno, Nevada.
Mostly Reno, Nevada, you say. Mostly Reno, Nevada, but all over, I guess.
I was born in Denver, well, Aurora. And I've lived in Washington State, California State, in both South and Central. I've lived in Oklahoma, Missouri. Where else?
So you've lived just about everywhere. Now, can you hear my son in the background?
Just a little bit.
Okay, so we have something in common. We're both parents, and I think this will take the sort of routine of this show. Oh, for the love of God! He's now going mental. But anyway, we'll have that sorted out in a second.
No worries. Okay, I'm totally used to it. I try to write and, you know, do my business while juggling my son, my husband, because he works from home too, so we're busy around here.
Yeah, this is true. And I don't have a very understanding family for when I'm recording. They tend to get a bit more Colombian during recording moments, so that means even noisier. It's the moment to vacuum my office. It's the moment for the baby to be screaming. It's the moment for everything. But that's fine. I mean, that's the way it is.
I think we could say this is a very authentic moment.
Yes, it's true. But I mean, you know, as we said, we're on this chat here, we're chatting. We had to get you to move because you have people painting your apartment. And the guys, and they were so loud. They're so loud.
And you hear them yelling, you know, "Hey, parcero, da, da, da."
Yeah, a little bit. But I just wonder why I think it's a Latin thing, isn't it? There's a love for unbridled noise.
You know, I worked in construction when I was 17, and they bullshit as much here as they do there.
Okay, fair enough.
Then, this
is true. So hang on a second. So you're from all over the States. You're in Pereira, Colombia. So, I mean, you're a bit of a nomad yourself. So it was never a surprise to your parents that you should move down to Colombia.
Oh, I've tried shocking on my mom for years. And every time I call her and say, "Hey, mom, guess what I'm doing?" She's just like, "Okay."
Well, that's fantastic. So that she doesn't react at all.
She was in Turkey back in the 80s during a deployment with the National Guard. She's been around Europe. She's traveled all over the U.S. She knows probably more of the U.S. than I do.
That's very cool. That's very cool. So now tell me this. You met your husband. You came down to Pereira to teach English. Now, were you teaching in the private school there?
Well, I went to work for a Canadian institute based out of Ibagué. And I worked for them for 6 months. And then, you know, some stuff happened. I ended up switching to another school, went to work for a colegio for a year. I escaped with my life. And then I had gotten into doing the copywriting, and now that's what I do. And as a child, I said I wanted to be a writer, but now I'm living something that I never really thought I'd end up in, but I love it.
Excellent. So following your dream is what we should be all doing. Huh?
It's true.
And it's fantastic. It's so good to hear that. You sound happy. You know, we don't know one another in in person, but we sort of, I think we stalk one another via our blogs.
That's the blogger thing. I think we all are just online stealth spy system where we're all checking each other out while trying to be individuals and unique and our own niche and all these things.
Yeah, but you've got your niche. You're there in the coffee zone. You're there. You're fine. You're married. And also, you've got so many good stories. You know, I've been reading them up. And the most recent one you've been doing, and I believe it's going to be a three-part series, is about the Chocó.
Yes, the Departamento de Chocó.
Yeah, so Chocó, as we know, and for those people perhaps who don't know, who are listening out there, the sort of westernmost department of Colombia, a huge department and mainly overlooked by the government.
Well, it's like one of the most untouched rainforest, biggest untouched rainforest jungle region in the world. Something like that. Don't quote me. My facts are not straight right
it's
now.
It's mega diverse.
It is. It's such an amazing place. I've got this 3-year fascination running with it.
And you should, because it's pretty much the first place in Colombia that I got to know. And I haven't been in a while, but it's just so remarkable there, the nature and the people, and that it is so isolated. I mean, that's part of the attraction, I think. And of course, the accessibility then is so difficult. Now, you were in a... Sorry, go on.
A danger. You know, Americans were so insulated that we're attracted to extreme sports because we live these perfect, safe lives. And sometimes, to be frank, danger attracts us.
That's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting that we have to throw ourselves off cliffs, I guess, in our own countries because we need the danger.
Well, you never hear about a French guy getting kidnapped.
Okay. All right. But anyway, so we're talking very interesting now. It's a very interesting point.
I joke. But you always hear about American ex-military or American something or Canadian, you know, something kind of, you know, where maybe they went looking for it.
Yeah. Well, there was the American ex-military in Guaviare, but there was also the French journalist, Romeo, what was his name? Romeo Langlois.
I think I'm choking on my foot.
But he was out with the army, and they were out on a mission.
Okay, so, you know, it was almost intentional.
It was a different thing. He wasn't out there going, you know, "Oh, I'm just a backpacker," et cetera, et cetera. But it's interesting because all of these things, you know, we have no sort of – it's almost like a random stream of consciousness that we're talking about right now, because we jump around from the Chocó. We jump around from, you know, extreme sports, adventure sports. And it's interesting because that's how I see your blog as well. It's very, but it's organized. But you're always making references back, and there's, you know, And in the very title of your blog, Open-Minded Traveler, you are shedding this thing of the security, you know, in the US, aren't you, a little bit? You're saying, you know, you want to go out there and get things done and do things and see things and get involved.
Well, you know, I grew up reading Louis L'Amour as a child.
The Western books.
Yeah, he wrote about these great adventures, but the life of Louis L'Amour has always dazzled me in the way that maybe, you know, some of the writers here in Colombia are dazzled with Gabriel Garcia Marquez, because he lived kind of a surreal life himself. He quit school at 12. He said, there's nothing I'm going to learn here that I can't learn myself through reading or out in the world. And from then on, he was a wanderer. He went to China and was Shanghai'd onto a boat for a while. And he's been all around the world. He was an elephant tamer or something. He did something with a circus. He was a cowboy. That's where he met a lot of the, you know, the old Western cowboys as they were, you know, hitting their...
So you are the modern day Louis L'Amour.
You know, he's been kind of a childhood idol of mine, and chasing adventure has always been kind of in my heart.
I love this. And this is how I'm going to end up titling this show. It's going to be the Louis L'Amour of Pereira.
Oh, dear. Well,
Luisa, yeah. Luisa L'Amour.
Maybe. I hope I do him justice.
Well, I think it's fantastic. It's so great to hear from someone who sounds so, you know, at ease with everything and so in tune with what's going on. Let's promote your website some more. It's openmindedtraveler.com, theopenmindedtraveler.com. You can find all sorts of information about Colombia. But I want to also go back to the Chocó, because the Chocó is one of these places that not a lot of people get to go to, because of course the accessibility, and then of course the cost of getting there because of this limited accessibility. You know, it's the whale watching place if you're on Nuki, by a Malaga, by a Solano, all of these areas. You can go out there. It's just the jungle tumbles into the ocean. It's nature, you know, and it's very prime there. And now you are out there for a while in an area called San Jose de Palmar. I don't even know where that is. Tell me about it.
Well, it's actually the part that's close to the coffee region.
Okay.
We have this little backdoor exit by Cartago where you hop on a Chiva in Cartago, which is Valle. And then you cross, you just head off down a major cocaine shipping route. And after a while, you go off onto a dirt road after your only rest stop between the, you know, the 4-hour ride. You go over a terrible road, you come to this little pueblo, and you're there.
Wow. Let's wind back. You go over a major cocaine transshipment route.
That's what I've heard.
But you didn't see anything.
I'm not saying anything.
So we're waiting for the next blog post.
I saw some very interesting stuff this time. You know, I just kind of interviewed everyone in sight just to get an idea, and few people start talking about, you know, their part in things, and my next article is going to be quite interesting because, you know, I'm not trying to promote the guerrilla, I'm not trying to promote drugs, I'm just trying to show you that edge of danger while also showing you why it's actually kind of safe.
Yeah, you know what? You're not involved in that industry. You're not meddling in it, so you should be able to just pass on through, surely.
I'm a pothead. I'm not a cocaine snorter.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, but now, so it's over these dreadful roads, which I imagine are just mud and rutted and puddled, and then you get to San Jose.
It's surreal. This is where the magical surrealism comes to life for me, I think.
Okay.
Because you go off on this dirt road, it looks like you're going down someone's driveway. I mean, if we were in the States, we'd be going down someone's driveway. But it's not. It's just a one-lane dirt road, and you go up and around, and you wind past these little farms, and they have this like signal to stop and go, and everything's just so raw because you're on this open-air bus that's just slamming its way down this road, you know. Sometimes they have to stop at a stream and throw water up on the engine. It's just bizarre, you know. It's something that, you know, you think of Romancing the Stone, that movie from 1984 that made...
Kathleen Turner and Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas's career.
Yes, this is true. This is true that he was able to come out from the shadow of his father. But
that's a And you know, that movie may be part of what inspired me to come here, you know.
So you get so like, you go, like how you got on the wrong bus.
Yeah, you kind of feel that way. And people who, you know, Colombians that go there feel like they're never going to leave there. Like it's like something bad's going to happen. For me, it's total opposite. I think it's like we go around this corner and it becomes this mist, this thick mist coming up out of the jungle. And all around you is like drop-offs, you know. You go around the corner and the road's dropping off on one end and going straight up on the other end. It's, you know, a sheer cliff. And it's this mist, so it's like foggy, and you get this otherworldly feeling all around you. You pass through this mist, and after about an hour or two of going through it, you exit the other side of it, and you're suddenly in the pueblo. It's like you come out of the mist into the pueblo.
Amazing. And how many hours travel is it to get to San Jose?
On a motorcycle, 2.5, maybe 3. You know, if you have to go by bus, like I do with my 1-year-old, which we also did that when he was 6 months old too, it's 4 to 5 hours.
Wow. So it gives you an idea. It gives you an idea of how far it is. Now we're going to continue on this theme because I want to talk more about San Jose and your experiences there. But we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back to talk further with Aaron Donaldson of the Open Minded Traveler. So don't go away, please. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, but talking to Erin Donaldson in Pereira in the coffee area. But we're talking about her adventures into the Chocó. Now, this is an area of the Chocó, the department on the westernmost edge of Colombia, that I have no idea about because it's closer to the coffee zone. So we're talking about her travels now to this area called San José de Palmar, which is, as you said, like 5 hours in a Chiva bus from Cartago. Uh-huh. Tell me, why are you going there?
Well, my husband's family, a lot of our in-laws are out there. So my mother-in-law, she lives in this farm way up on top of a mountain without any electricity. It's just a little tiny, it's amazing. We get to the pueblo, and that's not even the end of our journey. We have to go down to the river, which is 30 minutes by motorcycle, and then go up the mountain 2 or 3 hours by horse.
This is way off grid.
We're off grid. This is every prepper's dream.
I'm a bit pitching. So you take the Chiva, then the motorcycle, then a horse.
Uh-huh.
And how is this traveling like this with the 1-year-old?
It's kind of crazy. I mean, I could not imagine doing it with any other child. Mine, I don't know. We have this synergy when we travel. I've been traveling with him since he was born practically. You know, we couldn't travel the first month because he was born premature and we had to really be very attentive and very careful with to keep him at home. But after that, you know, just the way I am, I guess, we started, you know, my mom came, so we were showing her all of Colombia, and later my dad came, so we're showing him around. So I've been traveling with him since the day he was born. Just
excellent.
About.
So he's growing up as all terrain, as I say here, todo terreno.
He really is. In fact, my husband says that all the time. And so he's kind of gotten accustomed to just being able to sit in the carrier when I'm walking on the bus. I have to hold my arms and that gets hard. That's, you know, it's not, I can't believe, every time I do this trip, I can't believe I did it.
Yeah, it's excellent. Now, did you take your parents up to San Jose?
No, this is something, I don't think my parents physically, you know, nothing against them. They just, you know, you have to be at a certain physical level of fitness to be able to handle it out there, I think.
I can understand that. I mean, it does sound, I mean, we were talking about extreme sports, but this sounds quite extreme.
Well, yeah, I train on a regular basis. I do Taekwondo and Muay Thai. So I train 3-4 times a week. Even, you know, when I'm at home, I do a lot of jumping, my jump rope, you know, just so I can have, you know, not just a baseline physical fitness for when I do travel, but also so I can defend myself from anyone who gets in the way of me and my baby.
There we go. That's the bear cub instinct, the mama bear instinct.
Yeah.
I can understand that. I can understand that. Now, I think it's just fascinating because, I mean, so, but your husband is Paisa, so he's from the coffee area.
He was actually born in Pereira,
okay.
But as a child, he lived in a part of Tolima that was quite hot during some stuff that went on back in the 80s. And then he also was displaced from Choco later by stuff that was going on out there.
Wow. I mean, and you know, so we're talking about, so he's one of the over 5 million internally displaced people in Colombia.
Yeah, he's lived through such crazy things. He's talking about, you know, guerrillas coming by the farm and making demands, or, you know, even just being in the city of Pereira at times when he couldn't be out at the farms, seeing the violence in the streets and coping with it.
It's an amazing, it's a different outlook on life. You know, we come and it's all fine and it's all rosy and Colombians are wonderful. But then talking to someone like your husband is eye-opening, I imagine.
It really is. I mean, I've been with him, been together almost as long as I've been in Colombia, because we kind of met, you know, when I came here. Mm-hmm. And I still learn new things all the time, and it's still totally unimaginable for someone who's grown up in the U.S. Even someone like myself, who grew up with horses and I was involved in shooting sports, you know, it's always an unreality for us.
Yeah.
Here it's a very real reality that they have to live and be mindful of.
This is true. This is the truth of it. Now, and when you've been out to San Jose del Palmar and stuff, have you confronted any of these problems? You're gonna tell me you can't tell me, can't, aren't you?
Well, I can see a lot of bizarre things going on from stories I've heard. You know, I mean, I can't say too much, but the guerrilla, you know, does have an involvement in Pueblo politics. The cartels are very involved in day-to-day life. Even, you know, who gets to, you know, raise a pig can be determined by a guerrilla faction or something like that. They're very jealous.
Really?
Their industry.
Huh. This is interesting. And how do they, you know, how have you been treated as a gringa?
You know, really, I haven't had an issue. I've been out there, I came out. I mean, it helps that my husband's family, you know, is from that area somewhat and known out there. He has a lot of cousins and aunts and uncles and stuff. So that's, you know, probably a safety net. There is a military base there. So they are, you know, it is fairly safe out there. It's nothing like it used to be. And the guerrillas no longer have the resources to really mess with me. And the worst thing I could probably run across out there is that somehow I'm out hiking way high up in the mountain where my mother-in-law's house is, and I stumble across a group of gorillas and they start asking me questions.
Yeah, this is true. But I imagine you've been trained up by your husband how to respond to the situation.
Yeah, just you tell the truth, you pay the bribe, you avoid, you know, small talk, and you just get on about your business.
That's right.
I haven't run into them personally, but I've been, you know, good news travels fast, bad news travels faster, and everyone knows who you are, where you're from, and what you're doing there before you even make it onto the horse.
This is true. Now, you mentioned something very interesting there, is the sort of the security ring of the family. And of course, it's something that I have in Mompós as well, you know, with the 12 uncles and aunts and so on and so forth. I would not have been able to have set up a business without them. That's the truth. I mean, they are my escudo, my shield. It's nowhere near as extreme as San Jose. Of course not. We have, you know, roads. although people, you know, will say that they will complain about them when they come in and whatever, but I think they're in a wonderful state compared to what they were 9 years ago. It's a different situation, but you are living a completely different reality. And when, you know, when the politicians talk about where peace needs to be sown and where peace needs to be done, it's in the countryside, and it's precisely in these areas like San Jose.
Well, the last time they had their constitutional convention in Colombia, they wrote in all these rights for the indigenous, for the Afro-Colombians, but they left out campesino in their language.
Yeah.
And that has led to so many human rights abuses, personal rights. I mean, just, you know, it's like it's given the government free rein to trample on the campesino throughout the country. And so you can see some of the synergy there, or what created some of these factions and why the warfare still kind of, you know, exists.
It's a reality over land and production and
resources,
isn't it? It's I mean, that's the basis of it all.
The basis of it all. Right. And then in the ongoing future, these resources, like the clean water that we drink right off the ground in Choco, are going to become, you know, the front lines of battle, maybe.
That's right, because, I mean, in Mompos, we don't have the water. You know, we don't. And it's, the rest of the country is going to have to start, you know, providing, because El Nino at the moment is strafing us.
Yeah, well, I'm involved in, you know, the Orchid Association, and there are orchids blooming at different times of year that they've never bloomed at these times of year. I mean, just to show how out of kilter the climate in Colombia is, you'll have orchids blooming during the flower festival in May, June, that should be blooming at a totally different time of year, while the ones they usually use for maybe their seed are not available.
It's crazy. It's crazy. So fascinating to hear this, Erin. I mean, you're really opening my eyes, and I hope the listeners out there are really, you can take on board quite how, I mean, it's not even an exaggeration to say you are right out there, almost on the front line of everything. When you go out to San Jose, I mean, you are talking about being, you know, with your nails in the dirt of Colombia. You really are the authentic country. I have nothing but admiration for you in this, and especially taking a child out there at such a young age.
It's a tough journey. I mean, the first time we went out there with him when he was 6 months old, he couldn't ride the horse because just the way he had to sit in front of me, his head was, you know, he was just uncomfortable. And then the second time, he was finally big enough now where he was actually able to, you know, get into the rhythm a bit better, and we had an easier time going up. But it's, you know, it's a trip.
It's interesting now. Is it listening to your sort of accent and your attitude that's coming through? And an attitude, I mean, in a good way. But listening to this and the mentions of horse riding and Louis L'Amour, I mean, you really do come across as a cowgirl. There's a kind of, you know, of a country girl, the horse riding. You've got that sort of easy drawl that I would equate with sort of Robert Redford, or, you know, in the Butch Cassidy movie.
Well, I always throw the Colombians off in my sparring classes because I'll open up with something like "Yeehaw," and whatever it takes, I try to win fights, you know, and it just, we have fun.
Okay, fantastic. Now, I want to talk about something again, the thing we've got in common about, you know, raising children here. Now, I've read your blog, and it's a very, very personal blog about the pregnancy and the problems that you had. You ended up in a public hospital giving birth to Daniel.
Yeah.
How was the experience? I mean, I know that people out there, because most of my listeners are either thinking of coming to Colombia as travelers. I've got people in the diaspora out there, the Colombian diaspora, who've had to leave Colombia, who are listeners. But I've also got people in the, let's say, future expat community thinking of moving down, and they would want to know about public hospitals.
Well, Pereira, San Jorge in Pereira is, by rumor, reputation, whatever you want to call it, the best public hospital in the country. Okay. That probably made a big difference in everything, because their premature ward is very, it's renovated, it's brand new. It's, you know, it's not 40 million pesos that disappeared into thin air in Chocó, like what happened when the government sent money to their hospital. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Pereira is a very progressive place to be if you're going to have medical issues. You know, it's a small version of Medellin, really.
Okay. Okay.
And try to do private.
That was said in a very, that was very politically and sensitive. It was very, very well done, that. Try to go private.
I'm not very politically correct. As a country girl in me.
Why would you say that? What? Why is your advice, try to go private? I know why, but my listeners need to hear it.
Well, it's quite disconcerting to have your water break a month early, and then find yourself, you know, in the private hospital where you've got the money saved for a regular delivery. Okay, I had it planned. I had money saved to where if I had to have it in the hospital, I could. But I was going to try to have it home with as little interference as possible.
Okay.
You know, it's the way my mom did it. It's, you know, country girl tradition, maybe. I don't know. And so due to complications, she said, no, we're going to have to induce your labor, and you're going to have to have the baby now. And when we started sitting down talking about the premature services and what his expected development would be, they said, you know, this is going to be something like 8 million pesos a day, or it was some big number that neither one of us could have begged, borrowed, or even robbed a bank to get that much money in the time we needed it. You know, it was too much for my husband with his Colombian income and what little income I had coming in, you know, just from copywriting. So, you know, you really have to plan ahead for this stuff. And I kind of did. I thought I had it under control, but that's when you discover you have nothing under control.
Right.
So my husband, he is displaced. He went to Silvan and talked to the government to see if he could use his, you know, government benefits as a result of that to get us taken care of. And they quite graciously, I mean, I must say, I don't want to sound too arrogant or haughty or even angry in this subject, because I really am grateful that the Colombian government sprung for my costs. I mean, they didn't have to do that for a gringa.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, they did it, and it was a blessing.
Fantastic, fantastic. And everything, you know, okay, Daniel was born early, prematurely, but he's in great health now.
Oh, he the whole thing went beyond expectations for how he came out. It's being healthy, and he's been healthy ever since. We've never had a complication with him. But when I was in the ambulance being switched from the private hospital to the public hospital, and they had to push the ambulance to start it, it became of a bit of a roller coaster ride.
Yeah, but they didn't have to throw water on the motor to cool it down, though.
Those were the people that were being ambulanced in from Chocó.
Okay, fair enough. But anyway, it's what a terrifying. But it reminds me now. Early on in Colombia Calling, I interviewed an English lady who had her son here in a public hospital in the barrio of Fontibón here in Bogotá. If anyone knows where Fontibón is, it's west. You know, it's like a. With all due respect to it.
Is that comuna that you enter to get into Bogota?
Pretty
big,
much.
Nasty neighborhood?
Yeah, it's kind of, yes, that would be an accurate way of putting it. I'd call it a working class district, you know.
It's rough.
It's rough. Anyway, she married, she fell in love and married with a gentleman from there. And so she ended up down there and she ended up in a public hospital having her baby. She's in these rusty stirrups with her legs up, and she speaks very little Spanish, I mean, at this point. And so the doctor's trying to like placate her and put her at ease with a few words of English that he knows. So she's open, let's say, for the world to see. And in this miserable public hospital, by all accounts, with a doctor saying, "Mouse, chocolate." You know, those are his words in English. Mouse and
he was
chocolate.
Just saying whatever words in English he thought he knew so that she would tell him he was right or not.
Exactly. But anyway, yours sounds so much better. So much better than that.
I'm throwing some rose petals on it.
Okay. Very good.
I didn't make it to the stirrups.
All right. Okay. Very good.
I had my, they thought I was this, I mean, I was in the corner. I didn't listen to, you know, they were trying to tell me I had to lay down. They tried to tell me I had to do this, that, whatever. I followed nature. And so, you know, the American girl is sitting up, rocking back and forth in the corner. Meanwhile, you know, there's other, like, I was in a room of 16 women, 16 or 20 women, all in various stages of labor. There was an indigenous girl in one bed, an Afro-Colombian in another. I mean, all economic brackets, you know, most of them pretty poor, most of them from Chocó even. There were a few that were being bussed in from very far away.
Wow.
Or ambulanced in with the ambulance with the snorkel on it. Yeah.
Wow. So you're, hang on a second. So no plans for another child quite yet?
I'm a little emotionally scarred from the experience.
Okay. Now, okay, so we'll move on from that quickly. We'll start winding down the show because I know, you know, time is of the essence. But now I was checking out all of your blogs, and it's because it's great, you know, it's great to do this spying on blogs, but they're there to be read, right? The openmindedtraveler.com, it's there to be read. But you've also done an ebook, which is on Amazon, and it's about a year old now because I saw it was up from February 2015. Tell us about the ebook because I know people will be interested.
Well, I've been told it's very easy to read and very conversational. That's my voice.
Okay.
I try to be accessible. I try to be easy to read. I try to mix the truth in with some colorful metaphors and just do something interesting that people want to read, people want to learn, or you know, something different.
Oh, but tell us the title.
It's called A Columbia for Women, Tales of... I forgot.
But it's, you know, a Columbia for Women. It's a Columbia for Women.
I put together a bunch of stories from the blog. I added in some travel tips. I added in some quotes that I thought were kind of cool. I entered it in a contest. And the results really, you know, definitely I could have done a little bit better. I think eventually I'm going to take it down and rework the entire thing, because every year you, as a writer, you grow. And every year you suddenly see everything so totally different than the year before that you want to go back and erase your mistakes.
I can understand that. But anyway, it's a great, I would imagine, because I've read the précis and stuff, people who are thinking of coming to Colombia, women, solo travelers, it's for them, really, you know, to say you can come, you'll be fine.
I want them to read my stories and feel like they could do it too.
And they will, and they can, and that's the thing. But you know, you've just demonstrated to us through this whole chat here. It's been just amazing to talk to you, Erin, because you really are, let's say, a trailblazer in this. To be going out to these places, to be raising, you know, your son, to be in the heart of the society, writing, you know, sending out your ebook. You're living a lifestyle that I think. I mean, there would be hundreds of thousands of people who couldn't do it, but then there's all of those of us here with that twang of envy.
Just do it. Don't wait.
Just do it. Just do it.
Sorry. Talent is no excuse to not travel.
Fantastic. Now, Erin, so your name's Erin Donaldson. This is something I want to just run by as we say that the last things in this show, as we wind down, because I'm always laughing about how people spell my name here. First of all, they spell Richard without a D. That's fine. You know, I can survive that. My surname being Scottish, McCall, brings up all different options. And the other day, the gas company sent my bill with MEEKOL, I think it was Mecol, which kind of, you know, rhyming with fecal, so you know, not so great. How has your name Erin Donaldson been interpreted?
Well, I get either a blank look or a really weird attempt at saying my name when I say the name Erin. The Spanish, the way the Spanish musculature in the mouth is from that language. They use their lips a lot, whereas the Americans, we use our jaws a lot when we speak, the muscles. And so the way they're able to pronounce things without, you know, without practice is quite different than how you and I are able to pronounce things. You know, we can say things like, I quiero Taco Bell, right? You know, we destroy the Spanish language all the time when we're trying to say it, you know, and they have the same thing with my name. They end up having to say Erin.
Erin.
I always just spell it, say E-R-I-N-E. I spell it, I say it, and I just say that. It's okay. I'm not going to get offended if you can't figure out how to say it the American way.
Because I would be worried, because you know, again, being a bit rude, not knowing you, it's not far from Orina, you know, Erina, Orina.
Well, I've gotten Erini in Brazil. I was on a plane in Brazil with a bunch of monks, and they were all trying to figure out what my name in Portuguese would be.
Well, if it gives you any feeling of it keeps you calm, my friend Kevin. I mean, Kevin's an easy name. He had it spelt Q U E. Bin the other day. Kevin, you know, but it's not wrong, is it? It's not wrong if you say it phonetically. But anyway, Erin, let's wind this down. It's been wonderful talking to you. You've given us a real insight into a different Colombia. And I want to have you back on the show in you know, some months' time, which we'll check up on you and see how things are going, and perhaps be able to discuss more your forays into the Chocó, because I know that these articles that you're saving for your blog are going to reveal greater insights into the Colombian condition.
That'd be great, Richard. It was a pleasure talking to you, and I hope we can share again, because life's an adventure and I'm trying to find it anywhere I can.
Thank you very much. So we've been talking to Aaron Donaldson, the very own, our very own Louis L'Amour of Pereira, and an adventure into the Chocó region. Check out her website. That's theopenmindedtraveler.com. You'll find out all you need to know about different areas of Colombia. This has been Colombia Calling. I've been Richard McCall. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Different angles today, but that's what we're always striving for. So episode 124 coming to a close. Thank you for listening.